Hey, what's going on, guys? Marty from the Grass Station Podcast. Welcome into Season 4, Episode 1. All right, we are starting off the season early this year. I love it. Weather has been incredible pretty much all across the country, except for some spots that just got snow. But for mid-March, I mean, we had some 60-degree days in February this year. Ground did not really do a full freeze, so a lot of us have already got that first mow of the season under our belt, and that's exciting. I'd love to see that super early in the season. So stick around. We're going to be chatting about how the weather affects our early spring program, and what we need to be doing to get ready for the spring now that we've got a little bit of a jump start here on the season. So first day of spring, wanted to get you guys out an episode, wanted to set it off right for the season so that we can get you guys something to work with and fill you in about what's been going on around the property. I mean, things have been crazy. You'll probably hear my horses neighing in the background or pooping, and that's just where we're at right now. So my studio is the barn, and we're doing the best we can. So stick around. We're going to be chatting a lot about what we need to be doing to our lawn here in the early spring season to get ready for the whole year. What should we call this one? Should be First Mow 24. Yeah, I don't know. The names are always tricky. I'm not sure what to name these each, but focusing pretty heavily on our spring season program. All right, guys. So if you look back at some of the things that we've done, you know, this is the fourth season. So now you guys have got at least three or four episodes of me talking about what our spring program has looked like. But I always like to give you guys an update. I like to do this year by year because conditions change, weather patterns change, products change that we can use on our properties, right? All sorts of things change. And I like to offer you guys some options so that you know what we're doing as we go forward in the season. So as a good rule of thumb, right, our first application is almost always a pre-emergent, right? And why do we use a pre-emergent? What's a pre-emergent? Our seasoned listeners, you're going to tune out because this is what's going on right now. Everybody's talking about pre-emergent, so we got to talk about pre-emergent a little bit, right? So a pre-emergent herbicide is just that. It catches the weeds before they emerge, right? Go back, listen to a couple of the episodes I've got on pre-emergent, on herbicides. If you need a refresher, go for it. But there's basically three pre-emergents that we can use that are fairly readily accessible to us in the DIY lawn care community. The first one is the most accessible and, in my opinion, the least successful, which is pendimethalin. Pendimethalin's in a lot of Scotts products. It's in Scotts Weed and Feed. A lot of stuff you can get at the Home Depot or Lowe's will have pendimethalin in it. Nothing necessarily wrong with that, but it's just not my favorite pre-emergent. It doesn't stick in the soil very well. And typically those are going to be put and paired with other nitrogen-based fertilizers. So you're going to be in a spot where you're going to have to choose, what do you want more, fertilizer or herbicide, right? Because once you start maxing out those herbicide levels, then you're going to be topping out in your nitrogen levels, and you can only put so much more down to be effective. What I always like to recommend to people to do is before they even know what they've got going on, to think about having a pre-emergent strategy, because at the end of the day, no matter what you've got, you do not want an invasion of crabgrass coming into your lawn mid to late summer. That's why we put down a pre-emergent. Now, you're going to hear people on the internet talking about pre-emergent as it's going to stop dandelion, it's going to stop clover. It's not. It will not stop maybe a couple of things, but it's not going to stop those broadleaf weeds from still coming up into your lawn this May. It's not going to stop those grassy weeds from attacking your property. What it's going to do is it's going to stop those crabgrass seeds from emerging, which is incredible. That's great. That's what we want, right? So I just need to get that out there and let everybody know that this specific step that we do in the early spring when temperatures get to be about, you know, 40 to 50 degrees soil temperatures, we apply our first round of pre-emergent herbicide. And then we'll go ahead and apply our second round of pre-emergent herbicide when temperatures, soil temperatures, of course, get to be closer to 55 degrees and stay above 50 for the rest of the season, because 50 to 55 degrees is going to trigger your crabgrass seeds to start to germinate. And that's why we want to get ahead of it at 45 degrees, 50 degrees, to be able to make sure that our pre-emergent herbicide is applied before those seeds start to emerge. Now, it's not like all of a sudden 45 degrees hits, 50 degrees hits, and all of those crabgrass seeds are just going to immediately start to blossom, right? You have thousands and thousands and thousands of crabgrass seeds sitting in your lawn. Almost every single American lawn has crabgrass in it. The ones that show it are the ones that don't apply a pre-emergent. The ones that don't show it are the ones that do, right? It's very rare that you're going to have soil unless you physically brought it in and you've sifted through it. Even still, like, crabgrass seed can travel for thousands of miles, right? It's one of those things that just gets caught in the wind and carries on. And then once it's in the soil, it produces thousands more every time that it blossoms, right, and drops its seed for the next season. So if you're a newer property owner and you haven't applied a pre-emergent in the past, this is a great year to figure out where you're going to be buying that material from so that you can put it down in your yard. Start the season off right, knowing that in June and July, it's not going to look like absolute garbage when that crabgrass comes through. So that's the first thing. The first thing that we do in the early spring, you know, is we like to apply a pre-emergent herbicide. Now, before you apply anything, the real first step, if you don't know what you have going on in your lawn, would of course be to do a soil test. Now, if you're not familiar with soil tests, check out our website. Go to thegrassstationpodcast.com, look under resources, and you'll find a link to our soil tests that we work with. They're awesome. You grab a couple of plugs, you go through and sift out any organic material, you send it out, and you're going to get a result back within like a week or two, I think. And that gives you a really good sense of what you need in terms of your major, your macro and micronutrients. It'll tell you if you're deficient in nitrogen. It'll tell you if you're deficient in phosphorus and potassium, right? It even goes as far as to show you like calcium and boron counts. Once you get into that area, it's a little harder to read and to manage. But at the same time, you know, you're really looking for those big three, right? The NPK, the nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium, right? Or the potash. Those are the big three you're looking for. The others are going to help, right? And once you start to treat your lawn right, you just really want them all in balance. So if, again, if you're a new homeowner and you don't know what you've got, my opinion is typically a starter fertilizer that's got a little bit of everything, like a 10-10-10, a 15-15-15, right? Something that you're not going to overdo in any one particular area. I would not go for like a super heavy synthetic, you know, like 40-40-40 or something like that. I would stick to something a little bit smaller, even though, of course, those numbers don't mean anything if you're not spreading it right. It's just the percentage of the bag that's in there. So you've got more room to work with on a lower number. You know, something like a Milorganite, which is only 6% nitrogen. It's very hard to over-apply nitrogen when those numbers are low. It's possible. You know, you just have a much higher percentage of being successful with your application because it's a lower percentage of nitrogen in those products, right? So yeah, go check them out. We've got the Soil Savvy, I think is what it is, or I gotta look now. So if you go to thegrassstationpodcast.com, you go in, go to recommendations, go down to My Soil Testing, which is our soil test company. It's My Soil Test Kit. And then yeah, if while you're there, you know, you want to get some fertilizer and some micronutrients, go ahead and check out. We've got Simple Lawn Solutions, which is a fertilizer company, a micronutrient, macronutrient company I've used for years. And Lawn Bright. Lawn Bright's a new one that I've been working with, and they will help you do an organic custom program, and they will essentially send you everything that you need based on the plan that you guys work together to create. So, you know, and then for all my DIYers, if you want to go to thedoyourown.com, that's got all sorts of stuff there. You can get that through our website. Yeah, so everything that I talk about throughout the podcast will be in one way or another on my website. So you feel free to check that out if you need extra help. But yeah, so we're going to be looking for our pre-emergent, and we're going to be doing one of those soil tests. Very important to know where your soil is at so you know what types of products to get and you can gear yourself into spring with the right products. So if you know what your soil's got and you know what you're looking at, that's a really good leg up and you've been doing this for a couple years, you know you're going to need nitrogen. Nitrogen gets used up, you know, quarterly, monthly, depending on how much you're feeding it and watering it, right? So you know that you're going to need something with nitrogen. And then it's always good to have, especially if you're throwing down seed or something else, to have some phosphorus in there. But if you continuously throw down phosphorus, that is something that will stick in the soil for a lot longer than the nitrogen. So be aware of that. If you're buying something with a heavy middle number, that gets used up far less frequently or is less readily available to the plant, excuse me, Sammy, than the nitrogen is. So you're going to have to be bouncing back and forth to a product that has a zero in the middle if you're using heavy phosphorus. And of course, if that's something that your lawn needs or not, right? So if it doesn't need that, especially after it's been established, you don't need phosphorus leaching out into our waterways and doing all that. Get yourself a soil test. Get yourself a pre-emergent. Get yourself something with nitrogen in it, right? Get the soil started. Now, this is just like basic lawn care stuff. Really, the springtime is to help us get back in the groove of things, right? We have to get back into the groove of understanding what our basics are. And those basics include we feed it, we water it, we protect it, right? We cut it every week. We apply herbicide to protect the lawn from weeds. We apply nitrogen to feed the lawn. Everything that we're doing is built around protecting and improving our turf base. Right? So we have to get back to the basics and remember all those things that we need to be doing. So it's a great time to start thinking about your irrigation, right? Most people haven't even thought about this yet. It's supposed to still have snow on the ground, but temperatures are warming up, right? So let's think about that. If we have an irrigation in ground, we got to start thinking, when am I going to get it opened up, right? Start to make those calls, get on the books for that first, you know, time that those texts go out that you want to be on the first on the list, right? I always like to do that. I would call my irrigation company and ask them. I would usually do it like in December. Be like, all right, guys, so when are you guys coming out? They're like, we haven't even scheduled anything. I was like, I know. That's why I'm calling you, because I would like to be on your first schedule. Oh, sorry, Mr. Teresi. That's not how it works. Well, how do we make it work that way, right? So I actually was able to get my irrigation company to switch their route. They were initially going to do like, I don't know, from like north to south, or they had a plan, but I was like, well, I would really appreciate it. And I'll tip your guys for coming out, making sure that my neighborhood is the first neighborhood that you guys hit so that I could be part of your first round of openings. Right. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And I was able, and then I always say the same thing on the exit. I say, well, I'd like to be your last customer closed out. So, again, I'll tip your guys if you can help us out to be last on the list. So once you develop that relationship, you know, you might get lucky and, you know, they might say, no, it's not part of our route. We don't do it like that. But if you start to build a rapport, I actually worked like with the owner of the company. It was Turf Industries that I did my irrigation at through Elgin. And, we just had a really good relationship. So I was able to leverage that and kind of help get things done. I remember when we were moving too, they had the guys that were installing the sign on our lawn. They blew an irrigation line digging and they were out like within 2 days to come and fix that. So Turf Industries, if you're in the Northwest suburbs, if you're looking for irrigation, they're a great company too. I've worked with them in the past. So let's dive a little bit deeper into this discussion about pre-emergent, right? I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit because you guys have all heard me talk about our you know, early spring process here. And so it's really just an overview. I don't want to spend a significant amount of time talking about it because you've got prior years to look back to. But basically, with the pre-emergence, you've got prodiamine and you've got dithiapir. Both of these are going to be really good options. It's going to depend on what you can get, where you can get it, and what your applicator is. If you're going to be using a granular or a sprayer, because that will help you dictate where you buy your product and how you're going to use it. So I tend to lean towards the prodiamine. Prodiamine has always worked well for me. Some people say that the dithiapir has a stronger impact on other broadleaf weeds, right? So it's not just for crabgrass. It's got a little bit of additional protection, if you will. And that's great. I just feel like the dithiapir, in my opinion, tends to be used up quicker in the lawn than the prodiamine. The prodiamine seems to have the longest, most effective hold against the crabgrass, in my experience at least. But it really depends on like where you can get your product, what the price is, and how you apply it. Because prodiamine could be applied both as a granular or as a liquid. I prefer to do a granular, like a heavy granular application first, because that kind of sits into the ground before the soil temperatures are perfect for germination, right? So it gets settled into the soil. It's going to rain a couple times that early spring season. You know, we're getting lots of rain typically, right? On a spring season. So that's going to work in that granular really well. If you get a lot of rain and you use a liquid, there's a chance that could get, you know, kind of washed out as well. Similarly with the granules, if you have a massive rain, like a tsunami rain, you know, definitely a percentage of those granules are going to be washed away too, right? But, you know, the whole point is that you're going to have two separate applications. If there's a every 10-year flood or whatever, you know that some of it got put down, some of it was effective, and you've got another application right around the corner that's going to fix whatever hasn't been done. And that's when I like to come around, you know, when temperatures start hitting that 55 degrees and I start spraying prodiamine. That's when I do a liquid prodiamine to get into the soil as quick as possible. For that, you know, it just seems to be my preference. I can't say either one of those work better or worse. I will say, though, that on my current property, I typically prefer to use most things liquid just because I don't have a very big spreader, excuse me, Rico, to apply to large scale property, right? We've got several acres now. I used to really like putting down granular because that just felt right. But now I do almost everything exclusively liquid because it works well in my 30-gallon sprayer. But again, that's a preference thing. I could get granular, I could get dithiapir, but I use the liquid prodiamine, which you can get through Do Your Own or Yard Mastery. I don't have a link for Yard Mastery. Still waiting for the LCN, Alan, our savior, to approve that. But I still love using Yard Mastery, and I use that all the time for things like that. But I've kind of segued over to doyourown.com because they have a little bit of a better cost on a few of the things. But Yard Mastery is great because it's super targeted to the DIY community, and you can get like a 9-ounce bottle of prodiamine, which normally on the bigger sites, you're going to need to get like a, you know, a 20-ounce or 32-ounce jar of the prodiamine. And that can be very expensive because it's more designed for like commercial applicators, you know. So yeah, in that case, Yard Mastery shines, and you can get things that are the right size for most of our properties. Now, I need the larger quantities. That's why I'm going to doyourown.com. But people with 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 square feet, you know, they don't need a gallon of prodiamine. That would last them like 10 years. So unless you're like going in on it with another local lawn nerd, you know, like it's just too much product to have on hand, and they don't sell it in smaller quantities because it's not really helpful to them to sell it for that. They don't make their money on it. But Alan's shop at Yard Mastery, it's a little bit higher price, but we don't care. You know, like as DIYers, we don't care that it's a dollar more per ounce, you know, at a 9-ounce bottle, because we're only going to buy it once, maybe twice every couple of years. And, you know, it's just a lower use rate for us. So it doesn't make a huge difference whether or not it's a little bit more expensive through Yard Mastery. Unless, like I said, you were pairing up with another lawn buddy and you wanted to get the bigger bottle, take advantage of that discount. But most people wouldn't know what to do with a gallon of prodiamine. It would just sit on your shelf for way too long. Yeah, so get yourself a soil test. Get yourself some pre-emergent. And pre-emergent's going to work on whatever grass type you've got. Of course, read your labels. I'm not here to tell you exactly what's in every product, but, you know, your warm season, your cool season grasses, they're going to be both in a very good shape to take on the prodiamine. It's kind of industry standard. And then, yeah, dithiapir I've not seen as a liquid. I've only seen the dithiapir as a granular. And usually it's like a yellow granular. And that's a great product to use, right? Like I said, because it's going to give you a little bit of extra weed control, but it's going to target that crabgrass. Now, that stuff gets used up by the plant a little quicker than prodiamine. So your turnaround time on a second application, I would say, is like 4 weeks instead of six. But either way, you should come and do like a back-to-back treatment so that you can get at least 3 to 6 months of protection on the lawn. Now, when you're thinking about that, right, when you're starting to think about your protection, you have to think about when you no longer want a pre-emergent herbicide to be effective in your soil. Most people are going to do lawn care renovations in the fall, right? So you got to be careful with that. You got to make sure that you don't put down 10 pounds a night or 10 pounds of prodiamine per 1,000 square feet, which gives you about 10 months of protection. It's a really heavy application. And on top of it, you could do damage to the grass, but it's also going to sit in that soil for a very long time. By rule of thumb, it's about 1 pound per 1,000 per month of protection, right? So if you've got 3 pounds of product, 3 pounds of prodiamine going down, that should hopefully last you 3 months. And then if in a month and a half after that, you put down another 3 months, it means you've got 6 months of protection on that property from starting from, you know, mid-April. So April, May, June, July, August, September. And then by the end of September, you're hoping to plant grass again, right? So it's very important. You don't want two super thick back-to-back applications. You want about 2 to 3 pounds per 1,000 square feet, which gets you about 4 to 6 months of protection. Of course, it's going to depend on whether or not you're irrigating properly, whether or not there's a heavy sun, or if it's a wet and saturated area. But generally, rule of thumb, you know, 1,000 square feet, 1 pound per 1,000 square feet of prodiamine per month of protection, right? So Labor Day is kind of when we start to get excited about laying down seed, end of August, beginning of September. So by then, you'll definitely be running low on whatever's in the soil and should be able to throw some seed down. So just be careful about that. If you're really heavy-handed with the prodiamine, then it's just going to last in the soil longer. It's hard to get that out. That's the whole point of a pre-emergent, is that it sits as a barrier at the top of your soil and doesn't allow those seeds to penetrate as long as it's in the soil. So yeah, that's really what you need for pre-emergence. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time. We can get into a bigger discussion if people are confused. Feel free to drop me a note. Feel free to reach out to us at the.grass.station.podcast on Instagram. Love to answer whatever questions you've got if they're pretty general. And if I notice people are having a lot of questions, we can go ahead and, you know, get you guys a specific pre-emergent episode if we need to. Excuse me, sir. I'm trying to do a podcast. But yeah, so I just want to touch base on that because that's one of our first moves in the spring. And that's important because, you know, we've got an early start to the season with our soil temperatures already starting to jump up into the 40s. So last I checked, our soil temperature was like 38, you know, one day it was sunny in the afternoon, it got up to like 42. So that's telling me that it's about time. And I'm in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. So, you know, if you're in the transition zone, I already see you guys mowing the lawn. I am so jealous, right? I saw Uli Pooley in North Carolina from KOTG, right? Keep Off the Grass. You guys are awesome. They're already mowing, some of those guys. Some guys in Texas, some guys in Florida. Come on. I'm so jealous of you guys getting a head start. But then there's also guys that are up over in Colorado that just got dumped on with snow. So I don't feel so bad about that being up here in the Midwest. We generally start thinking about our lawn care season in March. So I'm glad that we're on that page, right? Once March hits, you guys start to look outside. You got some warmer days coming up. Really what's triggering the lawn to wake up are those soil temperatures, right? So once you start to notice that, once you start to notice that there's getting more sun on your lawn, things start to wake up a little bit, go out, hit it with a rake, get all that stuff from winter out of the way. One of the biggest issues that you're going to have and we want to prevent is crowding and suffocation, right? Leaves that have been matted down on the soil all season long. Those are going to be detrimental to your new fresh growth here at the early spring season, right? If you've got a little baby shoots that are trying to come up and you've got some leftover fall leaves that just have now been sitting at the base of the soil line and thick layers, that's just going to create a situation where you have no oxygen at the base and it could create a fungus. It could just get nasty, right? So we want to open it up. We want to open up that soil level and make sure that we're clearing out all the gunk. We're getting all the stuff that doesn't need to be there scraped out and ready for the grass to just start to thrive. Now, of course, a lot of people, especially like the more that I get into this, I get so much resistance about like, well, is that right for the ecosystem? And what's like the organic way, like natural, it's got to break down. I'm like, yes, of course. Like if you're there's multiple strategies. And this is what I like to give people, right? There's multiple strategies for whatever you're trying to achieve, right? If you want to have an immaculate lawn and you want it to be golf course quality and you want it to be immaculate, right? That's a far different strategy than wanting to be as renewable as possible, being as true to the land and true to the natural ecosystem and true to the, you know, the natural processes, right? Like they're very different strategies. Say you want to use zero product and you want to do it all through natural resources. That's possible, right? We're learning how to do a lot of that now with all of our extra animals on the property. We have 50 plus animals on the property. Two of them are horses now producing poop and manure at the rate of like 30 to 40 pounds per horse per day, right? So our compost pile is stacking up quick. We're going to be moving away from using a lot of different fertilizers because we have this source of nitrogen that we can turn into compost, right? So it's all going to have to season and it's going to take time, but that's a resource that we have that not everybody else has. And it's a resource that we can take advantage of because we have it. Now, if you have a 10,000 square foot property, you've got no access to animal manure, you know, like it's so much easier to throw a bag of fertilizer down because that's what's accessible to you. That's what's easy for you. You don't have the same situation, right? And that's what's cool about our situation. We're blending and we're learning about all the different options that we have so that we can help teach you guys other ways to do it. It's one of my passions to be able to offer solutions to all people, right? Like I have a few people that work with me that very much are against anything that would be harmful, right? Like a zero herbicide lawn. I've got a few of those. People have asked me for, quote, natural ways to maintain their properties. And, you know, it really just gets back to me. It's like, well, why? Right? I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say yes. I'm going to figure out exactly what you're trying to achieve and help you achieve that goal. Right? So for some of these people, they're saying, well, it's really important to me that I don't have any of these chemicals accessible to my dogs, to my kids. They could be harmful, you know? And so what happens there is there's just a little bit of education that needs to happen. Because if your goal is to have a beautiful, lush lawn for your kids and your animals to play on, and traditionally this would be like dogs, you know, like we have a different situation. We have pasture where horses and other animals need to be. But if you're trying to have your typical suburban, beautiful lawn, you know, could be urban too. I know you guys, there's some city folk out there that got nice little patches, but, patches. But for the most part, we're a suburban group of guys that are looking to make our yards pop, making our yards look comfortable and be usable for our families. It's a family need product. It's not really usable to have a meadow of wildflowers in your 10,000 square foot backyard. You can't play soccer back there. You can't play fetch. You can't play on the playground, you know, like in a 10,000 square foot lot of flowers, right? Like, as beautiful as that would be, it's not really practical, right? Other people say, go back to prairie grasses in your backyard. Well, again, if prairie grasses are growing to my knee or my hips, you know, sure, that might be right for the natural ecosystem. But again, that client might have three kids and they are trying to play baseball in the backyard or wiffle ball in the backyard or whatever. It's just, we have to be cognizant of what we're trying to achieve, because there's a different answer for everyone's situation. And it's important for you to know your why so that we can help you understand what it is that you're trying to achieve, right? So like my strategy is going to be vastly different than like what I would say like younger Marty in my previous two houses. Different strategies for everywhere that I've lived, right? And I even now have different strategies for like different sections of my yard too, because they have almost their own biodiversity. One of them gets more manure than the other because we've got the horses that are out there. One of them gets no animal activity, no kid activity. It's basically untouched. So again, you know, learn your land, understand what it is that you're trying to achieve. Get out there and walk your land this spring, right? With the weather being nice, get out there, be observant. Things are going to start very quickly. We've been given this opportunity to take advantage of a couple of weeks ahead of time to get out and start looking at our lawn. Sometimes our lawns are buried under a foot of snow and we can't look at what's going on until that first or second week of March. I think it was 2 years ago. I didn't get a mow until end of April. It's cold, man. So what all have we touched base on today? We've talked about our pre-emergent, right? We've talked about getting a soil test, especially if we've never managed this property yet, especially if we don't know what's in the soil so that we can get a good read on what we need to be purchasing to put down. You know, we talked about just being alert, getting out, being on your property, getting out there early enough to be able to look and being able to rake stuff out, clearing out anything that might be suffocating that early stages of the grass. You know, the trees start to grow leaves pretty quickly, and then you're starting to have dense canopy, right? So we want to be very observant of those areas that are normally under trees, normally under leaves. They're going to have some leaves at the soil base there. Now, I'm not saying to get rid of what you rake up, right? Leaves are an incredible source of carbon and minerals that the tree, that's basically how the life cycle of a tree is to be able, it pushes all of those minerals out through the leaves and then it gets reabsorbed, right? So we use all that leaf debris in our compost. We use it in our gardens. We use it as mulch bed around our trees. But I do not want thick layers of anything around the entire yard in the grass because it's going to create a suffocation situation. That ground needs to breathe. You need to have air and oxygen going into the crown of the plant so that you can avoid things like snow mold and other fungus issues that you might experience otherwise. So get out there and start raking it out, right? Be observant. The other thing that we can do to prepare, because a lot of us haven't had our first mow yet, and I know we want to, but how do we get ready for that first mow, right? This is how. This is how. We're observant. We're figuring it out. We're looking at our property. We're raking things out. We're getting the product that we need for the season. We're getting a soil sample, right? We're checking out what products we need to be purchasing for the season. And kind of part of that, a really big part of that, is making sure that our equipment is ready for that first mow of 2024. Right? What do I mean by that? You know, like, what equipment do we need to have ready? Of course, you need to have all your standard equipment ready to go. Your mower, your blower, your trimmer. Those are like your three musketeers, right? You know, like, you gotta have a good situation with your mower, your blower, and your trimmer. Now, you could get into the age-old argument of having an edger on top of your trimmers being a kind of a partner in your tool belt. But your trimmer can do everything that an edger can do. Sometimes an edger can just do it a little bit better against the sidewalks. But that's totally a preference thing. And we can get into that in another episode. But make sure your equipment is ready to go. And what does that look like? Right? What does that mean? It means, first of all, making sure it starts. You know, your lawnmower's got to start. If you have not started your lawnmower all season, all winter, my first suggestion to you would be to go outside into your garage and make sure that it still works. If you did not follow the manufacturer rules on your piece of equipment to make sure that it starts up in the winter, you're going to have some trouble. Now, if you have a gas-powered machine and you didn't put a stabilizer in it, you're going to have a situation in your hands with stale fuel very likely sitting in the carburetor. And you may need to clean out your carburetor in order to make sure that your piece of equipment will start that season. I've done this several times. I should put up a YouTube video on how to do it, but there's all sorts of people doing it already. Go on YouTube, learn how to do that if your machine is not starting. There's a few troubleshooting processes that you should check before you start freaking out, right? But you want to make sure that your equipment starts. Yeah. So frustrating if you are ready to cut and then did all this homework and then you get out there and your lawnmower doesn't start, right? How embarrassing is that when you go to rev it in the neighborhood and all the, you know, the soccer moms don't turn their head. They look at you like, oh, this guy, he doesn't know what he's doing with his lawnmower. No, you want all those moms to be turning their heads saying, wow, he's got that first pull. He's ready to go, right? His equipment works. Dang. That's what we want. We want that neighborhood domination. We want people to know my stuff works, works well, and you guys got competition this year, right? You don't want to be the guy out there that's like throwing the weed eater across the yard because you can't get it started and you're cussing at it. That's the last person that we want to be, right? So small engines are tough. I don't love engine work. It's not really my forte. I would highly recommend you guys find a good shop close to you where you can bring your stuff to if it starts to fail. But just read the owner's manual. That's like 99% of making sure that you get your stuff done right is, are you following the owner's manual? It's going to tell you like when to get an oil change, when to get oil filters, when to replace tires, how to manage the grease in the tires, how to manage the suspension system, how to manage the, you know, the dual hydraulic system if you've got a zero turn or whatnot. Be on top of that. Make sure that all your fluids are right. You know, be a good lawnmower owner and ensure that quality cut, because if you don't have a quality machine, you're not going to have a quality cut. So to get even a little bit deeper on the quality cut, I really encourage you guys as well to sharpen your blades before the season starts. And then sharpen your blades every fifth or sixth mow. If you can do it more often than that, great. But think about it like you don't want to be out there using butter knives to cut the lawn. You know, when you look at what it does to grass under a microscope, it like frays the blades so hard when you're cutting with a dull blade versus when you're cutting with a fresh, clean blade. It helps to prevent fungus and disease because there are fewer stress points on the blade of grass. It's just there's so many reasons to have a fresh, clean blade. If there's a dent in the blade, take it off, right? We don't want it flapping around under there where the weight is uneven. It's an absolute hazard if you're not inspecting the blade to make sure that there's any issues with it, right? That's one of the big issues is we will catch that. If we hit something and it bends the blade, we will catch that if we're changing it out every fifth or sixth mow to sharpen them. So it's just a good practice, right? That's kind of what we're talking about today, or just like good practices, good startup practices, good annual practices at least, right? And that's one of them, making sure that your blades are sharp before you start your season. And wash the darn thing, right? Get all last year's grass clippings off of there. You don't want any of last year's grass clippings that have been sitting under the deck collecting dust, maybe some fungus and some mold, right? You don't want any of that sitting on your machine. You want your machine to shine. That first mow should be a shining moment, right? Where your mower starts, your trimmer starts, your blower starts, and you're able to just get the job done quickly and well. It's going to set off your entire season right. So yeah, go out and clean your mowers. Sharpen your blades. Make sure there's gas in there. Make sure that you got an oil change. Make sure you got an oil filter, air filter change. Do all those things, right? Just check the boxes. Make sure that you've done everything that the owner's manual tells you to do. Grease the bearings. Grease the wheels, right? Put transmission fluid in it if it needs it. Fill up the tires with air. Make sure that you got treads. You know, patch it if you need to. Highly recommend doing that before you're out there in front of the neighborhood struggling with your equipment. Same thing goes for like your trimmers, right? Fill them up. Make sure that you've got fresh trimmer line that you have soaked. Hey, pro tip. God, this changed my life. Side note, while we're talking about trimmers, I don't know if you guys know this, but you're supposed to soak the trimmer line like
What? Like, so you're supposed to take the trimmer line, wherever you get it from, soak it under, like, in water, in a cooler of water for, I don't know, maybe like a few hours. Apparently, this, like, will allow the trimmer line to absorb moisture, which makes it stronger, apparently. So they're really brittle when they have not been moistened through submersion, right? So once you do this, it makes the trimmer line last like a lot longer. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. I never knew this until I got a reel. Somebody sent it to me and they were like, do you do this? I was like, I had no idea this was even a thing. But now, oh yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, what's a life hack that you never knew about that now you couldn't imagine your life without? Like soaking the trimmer line. 100%. Anyone listening to this out of context would have no idea what I'm talking about. My wife would be like, wow, really? You take that pretty seriously. But no, it's true. There's like very few things that I hate more than reloading trimmer line. It sucks. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I hate it. And like the different systems are all different. You know, I have a steel combi system and I got to unload it and wrap dual lines onto it. It's such a racket. I hate it. But then you got Ego, right? They came out with like this power button that you press and it'll coil it. I'm like, where are we at with that? You know, that's incredible. This is so old school. It seems like really strange that we still have this old technology on such an expensive piece of equipment when, you know, that press touch is on Ego equipment that's certainly accessible to the residential community, but the steel is still, that's pro quality. Why are we not upgrading for pro quality? I feel like that's where that upgrade should be. But yeah, soak your trimmer line and then yeah, load your trimmer heads, make sure they're all good. Grease them up where you need to. Small engines, I'm not a fan of. Like I used to have a small engine trimmer and I switched over to electric because I was just so tired of dealing with a small engine. It was never working, right? But now that I'm on a bigger property, I'm using the combi system far more frequently than I was using like my trimmer or my edger when I lived in Wheaton. And that's when I switched over to the gas or to the electric because it was just so much easier. So, you know, there's some things that, yes, I totally agree. The electric is easier. But there's areas of that I hate, which primarily for me, I just hate battery times. You know, I was never able to finish what I needed to finish in the time that I had with the batteries. And I had two full 40-volt batteries, and I was really struggling on my current property to be able to get all of that. So the other thing with that is, too, like I'm working with Kentucky 31 grass, which is a much thicker grass blade, and, you know, it just requires more power to cut through it. And there's far more fence line that I need to deal with on my current property than I've ever had to deal with in the past. So, you know, it depends on your situation. Now, up in the front on the 1 acre around the house, I think I'm definitely going to go back to battery power for a lot of things. I'm going to try to get a smaller, lightweight mower that I can get for getting around those fence posts before having to do the trimmer, you know, like just getting creative with my situation to make sure that I can be as efficient as possible. And that's what you guys have to do too. You gotta get out there and think about what you need equipment wise. You gotta figure out what you have, what you need, and what's gonna help you. You know, so get your mowers right, get your blowers right, get your trimmers right, and get out there. Right? Definitely. Decide if you haven't bought yet your equipment, think about that and start to think about what you're gonna have long term. Now I love the systems that can be built on top of each other. The combi system for steel, I love because it's gas and I can get multiple different attachments for it. Ryobi is the electric line that I've used in the past. I really like them as well. But there's all sorts of, you know, Toros now in the line. They've got the snow thrower. They've got a blower. All the batteries work together and stuff like that. So it just really depends on what you're going for and what you have. If you have anything already, try to stick with what you've got. If you don't have anything yet, I would highly encourage getting some kind of adaptable system. Even if you still use gas, like having some kind of battery powered system that gives you you know, like I need a little section that needs to be managed better. And it's nice to have a blower that you don't have to rev up. That's really great to just grab and blow off the patio really quick without having to use gas. You know, there's pros and cons to all of it. And I think that that's where we shine, because we can kind of have a little bit of both. You know, I've got the blower attachment that goes onto the steel combi system, and then I've also got the Ryobi 40-volt blower too. So that's kind of nice to have that option. When I need to really start blowing leaves, I can use the powered one. If I just got to blow off the patio, I don't need to rev up, you know, a machine. I can just hit a button and it'll work. My wife can also use that. She loves the battery stuff. She's never been a lawn care lady, you know, but using the blower is definitely something that she's getting more comfortable with. She likes to clear out the patio and, you know, just have things looking tidy. So it's nice to have that option to be able to quickly use something to clear off an area. Yeah, and same thing for, like, those of you who've got smaller properties on smaller pieces of sidewalk. You know, if you're running an edger or trimmer line, make sure, you know, you've got enough battery to do what's appropriate for your property. You know, so get your equipment right. That's really important for your first mow, is to make sure that your mower is ready, to make sure that everything you've got is ready. And then just, you know, make sure you're having fun. Sounds ridiculous, but, like, it's got to be, it should be fun. It shouldn't have to be a chore. It should be fun. It's a living ecosystem that we get to bring back to life every year. And that first cut is really going to do wonders for the whole rest of the season. It's going to get everything kickstarted, right? That first cut's going to be a little wonky. Some areas are growing in a little thicker than others, but it's going to even it out, and it's going to set the tone for the whole season. So I really want everyone to be thinking about that your first mow of 2024, whether you've done it already or you got to do it or you're waiting for it, you know, it's really going to set the tone for your whole season going forward. So if you had a great mow to begin with, it looks like everyone's just, like, loving it. I've seen people on Facebook, on Instagram, and God, they look so good already. I'm so jealous. But that's awesome, right? That's just getting us all started on the right foot. And we're going to have some Midwest lawns here popping really soon. But those North Carolina, Tennessee guys, you guys are having a lot of fun already. 3-4 mows in, a couple mows in already. So good for you guys. I love seeing that. And you guys have a totally different strategy for how you manage your entire programs. So I respect that. And, yeah, so make sure you've got all your equipment right. Make sure you've got your mind right, and get yourself a journal. Start to put, you know, record everything that you're going to be doing this season. If you had a difficult season last year, this is also an important time to reflect, right? And let's not make the same mistakes twice. If you over-applied some products, maybe we go less heavy-handed this year, right? I hope over the winter that you've had time to think about your successes and your failures, so that this year you can start on a fresh note with the right equipment, with the right mindset, understanding your challenges, right? Before we head off, everyone's got to remember our irrigation's going to be starting up soon too, right? So after we've got all of our equipment right, after we've got all of our pre-emergent, after we've got our fertilizer and our season planned, now we need to maintain the lawn, which is weekly mowing and weekly watering, right? How do we water? Friendly reminder, we're going to not do it super heavy in one go. We're not going to have the sprinklers running all day long for 3 days in a row, right? We're going to do it deep, but infrequent. This does not mean every single day for 10 minutes from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. in the summer, right? Go back, listen to one of my irrigation episodes if you guys want a lot more specifics on how we do this, but the primary thought behind this, which is springtime and getting ready for the season, getting ready for our first mow, which means we're going to have to start to get ready to start to irrigate, means thinking where your hoses are. Gets into your equipment. Where are your hoses? Where are your timers? Where are your sprinklers, right? Did you need to replace any new sprinklers? Did any sprinkler heads break this season? Do you have to repair anything? These are important questions to have answered and ready to go before your first mow. Because as you're out there, if you need to replace a head, it would make sense after you mow that area to throw a flag into the sprinkler head if you've got in-ground sprinklers to remind yourself that there's an issue there and to point it out for the irrigation company so that they can see it, right? If you know it's there and you know that there's a problem, be proactive about it. If you need to get new hoses, this is one thing that I need to do. I've got small, old, like residential style hoses, and I definitely need a higher grade farm quality hose. So if anyone's got any recommendations on hoses, reach out to me. I would love a new solution because we're pulling probably 30 feet, 40 feet sometimes of this hose over into, you know, like our paddock and around stuff. So it's nice to have a longer hose, but I think I need to go a thicker hose with a stronger head. Also, you know, like your water pressure, that's an important piece to it. I live on well and I'm still learning how to figure out like my water pressure and my water source. So get that figured out for yourself too. The last piece on this whole like watering business, of course, we want about a 1 inch of watering per week, right? Which includes the rain, it includes the storms. But if you get a half inch from a storm, you need to throw an extra half inch of water on there. That's kind of industry standard. Get that 1 inch per week. But the other piece about water that you guys need to be aware of is your downspouts. If you have areas of your property that are dumping water, it's going to hurt your lawn, right? You need to make sure that you're at a slope and your lawn is able to drain. If you have standing water in areas, if your downspouts are taking it to a spot where you have standing water, it's going to be problematic for you. You're going to have mold. You're going to have water. You're going to have issues, right? We need to have a well-draining area that's not going to hold pools of water. So get your grading right too. This is where that walking your land helps to walk your land when it's raining, right? I've got a lot of areas in this particular subject that I need to improve upon. I need to repair all of the downspouts on my property. I need to replace all of them with a new system. My drainage system has failed, and I think we need to replace the entire thing. So I need a temporary above ground drainage system that we're eventually going to bury. It's going to be a really big project. So everyone should be on the lookout for that probably next season for me to do a full rebuild on the in-ground system. But we're going to be putting some above-ground drainage that's going to move the water away from the foundation of my property and into an area that has proper grading. All of those pieces together kind of create this mindset that everyone should be thinking about as they're getting ready for that first mow of the season. Because it's not just getting out there and jumping on your mower and hitting it, right? It's really about starting the season off right. It's starting off on the right foot to make sure that we have everything that we need, to make sure that we have the right mindset in place, and to make sure that we have the resources, equipment, and product that we require to manage this property appropriately, right? So if you guys are struggling and you have some questions about what you guys need to be doing to get ready, feel free to reach out to us. Like I said, our Instagram's the.grass.station.podcast. On Facebook, we're at the Grass Station Pod, at Grass Station Pod. So same thing on TikTok or whatnot. So a couple of those handles. Feel free to check us out there if you have questions. Everything can be found at the website. It's thegrassstationpodcast.com. You can listen to your episodes there. Everything can be linked to from the website. So if you need something, feel free to check us out there. And you know what? While I've got you on that note, feel free to check out the recommendation section. I mentioned it earlier, but that's an area where, you know, if you use our links, we really appreciate it. And it's really great products that we're working with. Lawn Bright, My Soil, Simple Lawn Solutions, Jonathan Green. These guys are incredible products that we use on a regular basis that I recommend fully, right? I would not recommend anything to you guys that I don't use myself or would not use myself. So check that out. If you have any questions, our email's on there. And I hope to be doing this more often. I love doing this. I really do. But it's hard to be able to find time to manage podcast editing and all that stuff. So we're going to do our best. I'm hopeful to get this out to you monthly still. And that's my goal for the season, is give you guys monthly updates. So here we are. Here we are in March. And I hope to take you through the entire lawn care season this year. Stay tuned. If you guys just, you know, feel free to reach out to us in whatever way you need. We're on Instagram. We're on all those platforms, and we like to have fun with it. So until the next one, stay safe, take care, and we'll see you.
The Grass Station Podcast provides weekly updates, tips, product reviews, and coaching on cool season residential lawn programs, helping you save time, effort, and money all season long.